is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We begin hour number three. It is VSiN by the Books. I'm Dave Ross here, downtown Las Vegas at Circus Sports. Our closer, Jensen Lewis, before he gets back on that big bird to Cleveland, one more day in Athens, Georgia. We always love hour number three is just jam-packed today. Rachel Dorey's going to join us as well. Danny Kleppinger is going to join us to talk some tennis over there in Paris. But we kick off hour number three with the king of Connecticut, the one and only Will Hill. Give him a follow on X at Not The Will Hill. He is the host of the Should Have Bet More podcast. Joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. Will, is there a somber feel to the greater New York, Connecticut area today with the Knicks being eliminated from the NBA postseason?
I'll get to that in a second. First off, I just want to explain to Jensen and to the audience what kind of person, what kind of friend Dave Ross is. Because he texted me last night after Vanderbilt loses and says, hey, buddy, do you have a Wright State hat you can wear on the show? It'll be a great bit. I said, first of all, I don't have one, and I'm not going to do that to my buddy Jensen. So how dare you? So Dave will tell you some of those details. Part of that story is actually true.
Some of that, those roles might have been reversed, Jensen, but you get the idea.
something happened with the Wright State hat. Tried to get it ordered, couldn't do it. But now look, the Knicks fan is trying to tell himself that, hey, we're right there. We're so close. Maybe get rid of Tibbs. Maybe trade Towns. We're a move away from a title. It's weird because they overachieved in a lot of ways. If you would have said, a couple months ago, hey, you're going to be in a conference finals in the game six, man, that's a great season. How did that happen? But also, you lost a series where you had home court, and the Halliburton shot is going to haunt them for a while. Now, look, they were going to get to the finals and get swept, so it's not a scenario where it's a normal year of getting to the finals because there is such a gap between the West and the East, as I think we're going to learn here in these NBA finals. Ooh. I'm sure we'll get to. So the difference between making a finals and being like an actual contender, it's not like, if you go to a Super Bowl, we could have won the Super Bowl. Or, usually if you're in the finals round, the championship round, you consider yourself a contender. I don't buy that that's the case for the Knicks. So weird season here where they've overachieved and underachieved really at the same time.
Yeah, Will, and I think that's going to be a fascinating part of the Eastern Conference offseason in and of itself and what the changing dynamics may look like for a couple of those organizations. We get to a game one on Thursday here in OKC. A 9-point favorite, I think, right now the Thunder's sitting at, and not particularly surprised the number is where it is. Any initial feel on the dynamic we could get? Dave and I kind of alluded to the fact that the Pacers probably on house money. No one thought they would get here. They've only gotten stronger with each round. But I think you mentioned it kind of taking a big step up in weight class here with what OKC can offer.
Huge step up in weight class, and I just don't like the matchup for them at all. They play fast. They press you. They want to run. They want to play fast on offense, play fast on defense. I mean, we know this from the other sports. If you're going to pull an upset and you're trying to beat the better team, you're better off slowing them down, not speeding them up. To me, that plays right into Oklahoma City's hands. They turn you over. They want to run. They do everything Indiana does. They just do it better. I think people are afraid to underestimate Indiana because a lot of people have underestimated Indiana the entire postseason. I'll put my hand up to some extent, too. I picked the Cavs to beat them. I thought the Knicks would beat them in seven, so I think there's a little bit of a – remember 2 years ago, Miami made the NBA Finals, and by the time they got to Denver, they pulled all of these upsets. They beat the one seed Milwaukee. They beat the Knicks. They upset Boston in crazy fashion. People are just spooked by it. I'm not picking against this team anymore, and they gave them the benefit of the doubt. Cinderella usually does not win the NBA title. I don't think they're long for this series. I think I like OKC in game one. I just think it's, again, it's a bad matchup here for the Pacers, and you can get plus 330 on a sweep at FanDuel. Again, it's Ooh. Mean, it's disrespectful, but I think they're going back to Indy up 2-0, probably be like a 4.5 point favorite in game three, maybe a little low because the market will see a desperate Pacers team and like that. But I just think if Indy's down 2-0 going back home, if OKC can just get the third game, I think that's what it comes down to. Then you'll be in a position to game four where that the market won't love Indy as much. You can hedge, you can middle. I just don't think, barring an injury or something unforeseen, look, it's basketball, three-pointers, there's all these different, look, it's sports, things happen. I think OKC wins this series and wins it in pretty short fashion here.
I think maybe the only surprise that came out of when Indiana eliminated the Knicks was that Halliburton was not the Eastern Conference Finals MVP. They gave it to Pascal Siakam. Does this have to be SGA? Like, could you attack the market that way and go, he's going to be the most outstanding player in the finals here? Or do you get a little bit nervy after seeing the way that went down. I think Halliburton was taking a step towards the podium to get the trophy, and he doesn't get it. Like, is there any fear of that happening here, or does it have to be SGA?
Yeah, that was great. That was odd. I think it probably has to be SGA, and I don't know if you saw this. Siakam was 20-1, not before the series, before the game, before game six. Siakam was 20-1 to win conference finals MVP, and he was like 6-1 in the second half. Very strange. Usually the tie goes to the tie goes to the superstar. We see it in the NFL with the quarterback in the Super Bowl. I think SGA's status is just different than Halliburton's, and I probably would have voted for Halliburton. I'm surprised they gave it to Siakam. I didn't really care either way.
Mm-hmm.
I just think SGA is the regular season MVP. I think he'll get the benefit of the doubt. So it's not a bad idea, and it's not one of these situations where like there's any value on SGA, because the series price is in the $7 range for OKC last I look, and SGA is minus $6. So it's not like you're getting some bargain here with SGA. I mean, who would be the guy? Jalen Williams or Holmgren? I just have a hard time seeing it. I know Brown won it last year, and he wasn't the star, but he was kind of the co-star. I just don't know that anyone has the status, barring something completely unforeseen here, to steal it from SGA.
Yeah, I totally agree. All right, Will, let's pivot to a very abbreviated MLB slate today. And dare we say, as ugly as we've seen on a Monday so far this season, any spot sticking out to you as well?
Ooh, this is not the prettiest of cards. You know we're in summer. You know it's a Monday in the dead of summer, and we're talking Rockies Marlins. But I don't think I've played a pro Rockies bet all season. I'm going to take them plus a half a run, plus 110 in the first five. I don't have the guts to actually pick them to win a game, because you guys haven't noticed, they don't win many baseball games, but they've been close lately. Herman Marquez has actually thrown a few games the last four or five starts, pitched well against the Phillies a couple of weeks ago, pitched pretty well against the Cubs. He's had his moments, and I actually think, just from a big picture standpoint, if you're one of these teams at the deadline that needs a starting pitcher, the Braves, the Yankees, all these teams need starting pitchers. Herman Marquez, Kyle Freeland, you get them out of Coors, you can kind of change their pitch diet. Those are two guys I would take a shot on. So I don't think Marquez is that bad. He's not as bad as Senzel, as you guys were talking about before, who's really just not a major league pitcher. So I'll take Marquez plus a half a run. Max Meyer, great pedigree, great start to the season. He's been downright bad the last month, 6 weeks. He was given a 6-0 lead against the Padres last Monday night. Couldn't get through that. I'll take the half a run in the first five. Again, I don't have to win the game. 1-1 after five, 2-2 after five. That ticket cashes, so I'll take the half a run here with Colorado first five.
Shame on both you guys. We're burying the lead here. Well, we're talking about a bad slate. We got Paul Blackburn, the return of Paul Blackburn today for the Metropolitans in Chavez Ravine against the Dodgers here. What do you make of Blackburn coming back? It's been a minute since Met fans got him back from the Rockies here, so it's been a long injury. Do you like backing him coming off that injury today? Plus $1.43 in the Metropolitans.
I never like pitchers off of injuries. That's just a rule where you never know if they're sharp. You never know if they're healthy or in a rhythm. Blackburn's had a bunch of rehab starts, so maybe he defies that, and it's weird. They traded for him last year at the deadline, and you basically never saw him. He threw one or two games, and then he disappeared. He got hurt in the playoffs. I think he had some sort of back injury, spine injury. So he's had a bunch of rehab starts here. I'm tempted to play the Mets just because I don't think it should be in that plus 145 range. That's almost disrespectful to your Metropolitans, Dave. But tough travel spot to go from New York to LA without the day off. Does that factor in? I'm not sure. I like, if I had to play anything, I'll give out over 9. I think the Dodgers, I've played their overs the last couple days here, giving them out on VSiN against the Yankees. They just don't have the day-to-day starting pitching. They really don't. Dustin May, if you watch Pitching Ninja, you think he's like the greatest pitcher. He's got these wiffle ball pitches moving all over the place, but his expected batting average, 265. Expected ERA is not that good. Like, the numbers just don't match with the stuff for whatever reason. I think Soto's starting to get going. All the great lineups both ways with Soto and Lindor and Alonso and all the guys the Dodgers have. I think 9 over is the way I'd play it, especially with a pitcher coming back off an injury. I'm tempted by the plus money on the Mets, but just didn't quite get there.
Yeah, I don't blame you there, and a great handicap too. I'm the same way, Will. When guys are coming off injury, just seeing where the short leashes may be, just wanting the guys get healthy through those first starts off the IL. Twins and Athletics. Twins still an intriguing team there in the American League. Interesting series. What's the handicap for you in this matchup?
Yeah, I'm going Joe Ryan under 2.5 earned runs allowed, and it's the great thing about betting now. And Dave, you remember this? Someone who's bet a while. You used to just be able to bet the total, the run, the money line, and the run line. There are basically three options. Now you have player props, earned runs allowed, walks allowed, hits allowed. There's basically anything you could think of you could bet, which gives you great, you know, flexibility, maneuverability. Here is a better Joe Ryan under 2.5 earned runs. There's some juice involved, so -135, -140. Shop around, find the best number. But he's gone under this figure 8 of 11 starts. I know you're in the small ballpark of Sacramento here, but he gets swings and misses. He gets chases. He doesn't walk people. His numbers are off the chart. I actually think he's really underrated. If it weren't for Skubal and these other guys, he'd be right in the mix here for a Cy Young. And the way he's going, maybe he'll get some votes anyway. So Ryan under 2.5 earned runs for me is a play.
Plus, the
bullpen's good. So if he leaves with guys on base, maybe you know they can bail him out and those runs don't cash in against his record. Plus, it's earned runs. So you know what? You give up an earned
right.
Instead of playing a team total, you give up an earned run or two or an unearned run or two. It doesn't count toward, against your bet. So maybe a better way to attack it there, the under-earned runs.
I took from that I'm old. That's what I took from that. I remember the old ways of gambling. Very quickly, Jonathan Gannon, are you looking for Gannon to take a shot here for Coach of the Year?
20-1 Coach of the Year. They're less than 4-1 Arizona is to win the division. If they win the division, Gannon's going to be right in the mix for Coach of the Year. They really addressed their defense. They spent the entire draft just about on defense. Big names, guys, if you follow college football, you've heard of. In the first 6 weeks, they get two rookie quarterbacks. They get the Titans and the Saints with Shuck and Ward. They get Darnold behind an offensive line that might be shaky. They get whoever Indy's going to throw at them. That's a pretty soft. They get Bryce Young. It's a pretty soft schedule, and you don't have to worry about any cold weather games except for Cincy late in the season. That's a favorable schedule. I think Arizona could be like a 10-11 win team.
Check out the pod, the Should Have Bet More podcast, and give him a follow on X at NotTheWillHill. Will, appreciate you, my friend. We'll catch up again soon.
All right, see you guys. Sorry about Vandy Jensen.
He wanted to get the hat from Wright State, not me. We're back with our best bets.
I know.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis. Great conversation with Will Hill in the last segment. Again, very interesting. Will is going to be on Gannon at 20-1 for Coach of the Year for the Arizona Cardinals. And again, I like the rationale, right? That if the Cardinals are 4-1 to win the division as a long shot, if they win that ticket, then Gannon's going to be in that running for 20-1. Do you like those correlated type plays there when you look at the futures market in the NFL?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's the intriguing part about the NFC West. You and I had kind of talked about it, too, when we were breaking down the schedule release and saying, okay, Arizona in that division could be quite sneaky, right? You know, just kind of taking that next step forward, the offensive weaponry. You know, Marvin Harrison Jr. did not have the season that we thought potentially he could right out of the chute. Kyler Murray, you know, getting some familiarity there and understanding maybe some more health in the run game ends up opening some other things up for them downfield. I tell you, we also want to know kind of where the Seahawks will be here early on
right.
with Sam Darnold and kind of the revamped offense too. So I like where Will's at. If you're looking at those kind of teams, because, you know, yeah, you have the teams that are going to win your 10, 12, 13 games, but how is that team looking and what is the improvement year over year? So I like that play very much.
And again, looking down the board, they go to bed, Dave Canales there at Carolina in year number two. If you think Carolina could win the South, it's the same type of rationale that Will's using here to get home with his Jonathan Gannon at 20-1 with Arizona being 4-1 to win that West. Carolina could be one of those teams too, that if the division is down and Tampa Bay is right for picking, then maybe you could get Canales there too as well at 18-1. And again, these are the type of wagers you can make when you become a VSiN Pro subscriber. Do so today. You're going to get a full year for just $199 when you become a VSiN Pro subscriber. Plus, you're going to get a free pre-order of the NFL Sharp Betting Playbook by Josh Applebaum. This is really cool. It's a no-nonsense guide to reading the market, spotting sharp action, making those smarter NFL bets. So it's, again, $41 off your annual subscription fee when you use the promo code BOOK. So you get those daily best bets emailed to you, exclusive betting splits, access to the VSiN Watch app, and that NFL betting guide coming out in July. And Josh's book here, pre-order for you, NFL Sharp Betting Playbook. Check it all out now when you become a VSiN Pro subscriber at VSiN.com/subscribe. Without further ado, let's get to our best bets. Are brought to us by GBank, the official bank of VSiN. And again, some of those plays that Will likes here, he does like the Mets. A lean towards the Mets. Maybe the over is that stronger play today in that game in Chavez Ravine. Paul Blackburn coming back for me as a Metropolitan backer. I might wait and see. I kind of like where Will's head's at. It does feel a little heavy. Like if you want to hop in on the Mets at plus $1.43, not going to get mad at you going up against Dustin May. How do you look at this game tonight? And do you think we're going to get some runs with that total being at 9?
It would lend you that way, and I think just also where the composition of the Dodger bullpen too, in particular, you know how they have kind of been inconsistent in their own right. So can you get some early offense from both sides on the starters, and then depending on where those deficits might be, I think a great total to attack here. No official play for me in this game. I am more anxious to see, and David, it's been a theme we've watched with the Mets this year. Their starting pitching has been the big reason why they are in first place. Yep. And a big reason why through the first couple of months they've been one of the best teams in the National League. Now, in theory, getting a bit healthier with Blackburn and then Manaea on the mend, Montas here. You could kind of see those mini trades happening within and those reinforcements coming to help the major league club and it allows them to kind of pivot maybe to some other needs that they identify.
Mets are now even money to win the division. Phillies are even money to win the division. And the Braves are 11-1 to win the division. I don't want to eliminate the Braves because it's like Freddy Krueger. Every time you think they're dead, they're not. And they just come back. Is it a two-horse race? Can I whisper it and say that the Braves are done? And that it really is just the Metropolitans and Phillies?
I won't bet against Alex Anthopoulos only because, the recency bias. He went out at the trade deadline, got a whole new infield. Remember, the year that Ronald Acuna Jr. went down with the injury and was lost for the season, they went on to win the World Series. Now, the caveat is that their rotation was really good. And they had weathered some injuries there. I don't know if they can weather the injuries now with what happened with A.J. Smith-Shawver, with what they've had to deal with, just kind of the rotating arms through there. Basically, Dave, if they suffer another significant rotation injury, oof, I think that's curtains for the division for them. May not be curtains for the playoffs, because I still think they're a really, really solid team. And, any team within four games of 500, with their pedigree and knowing you still got 3.5-4 months of the season left, it's hard to write them off. But if you're going to play the Braves, I think it goes back to our idea, yes, about the American League, where you would take the National League pennant odds at 15-1, because if they get into a short series, and let's assume that you have a healthy Chris Sale, Spencer Strider, and Spencer Schwellenbach, if you've got that, you've got the ability to find your way through a wild card round and then potentially create some headaches in a divisional series. So absolutely would look at the National League pennant odds right there for the Braves. Still surprising you can get the Padres. I think it's 16-1. That number also sticks out to me a little bit. And then if, depending on what the news is here on Corbin Burnes for Arizona, and he apparently, from what I had learned last night, the actual imaging and the initial tests sounded like it was way better than what initially was looked at on the field. Because you could kind of see him verbalize. He said his arm was dead.
Yep.
And that's obviously never good for a pitcher. So, the Diamondbacks price would be attractive, but that is all contingent on what the diagnosis is for Corbin Burnes moving forward.
I'm with you. The Braves 15-1, 11-1 to win the division, 15-1 to win the pennant. The book's not giving you any cookies out there. I mean, look at that. That's the, fifth betting or... fifth betting choice here in the National League. That's amazing. You can still get the Padres. I'd rather have that ticket at 16-1. That's for sure. We mentioned kind of an interesting slate of some series starting today here in Major League Baseball. Wanted to just get your thoughts on the Brewers right now. They're red hot. We know that Aaron Civale is going to be on the bump today against Brady Singer of the Reds. Keep talking about the Reds, whether or not they can get back to that 500 mark. They seem to get there. Small favorites today for Cincinnati, minus $1.18. Come back here, and the Brewers is minus $1.02. Actually, plus money now at circa plus $1.03. So Reds at $1.15 there. Do the Reds end that two-game losing streak and end that seven-game winning streak of the Brewers?
I would take another page out of Jonathan Davis's book and I would play the run line for the Reds and the alternate run line for the Brewers. I don't see this game being close on either side. And so I would say root for a game that's decided by two or more runs, take your profit, and move on to tomorrow. You know, Milwaukee, from an offensive standpoint, has been swinging it real well during this win streak. They have allowed, you know, some runs here and there. And Aaron Civale in that ballpark, trust me, from watching him in Cleveland, not ideal to try and keep the ball down. But there is, you know, kind of that prevailing sentiment of when a team's going right, you catch the breaks. So that's what I would do. I don't think this is a close one tonight. So I think that's the way you play it.
Very quickly, Detroit's going to open up a series here in the south side of Chicago against the White Sox. Jonathan Cannon on the bump for the White Sox, and Jack Flaherty is going for the Tigers. I look at this thing and I go, it's minus 205 on the money line. Run line is minus $1.22, now up to $1.25 for Detroit. Is that the way to look? It almost feels a little bit short. I thought it would actually be longer, even though they're on the road today.
Yeah, you know, you would probably play, if you're doing anything on Detroit, it's probably maybe playing a more juiced minus one. I kind of like to look at those just to give you an opportunity in case, you know, there's a late surge there from Chicago. Let me shout out our great friend Joe Serrallo, because I think his player prop today is one to certainly look at. Jack Flaherty, six or more strikeouts. A lot of swing and miss there with the Chicago White Sox lineup. Whiff percentage is way up. So I think he's a sharp play right there in and of its matchup for Flaherty against the White Sox lineup. Absolutely love where his head at, so I would fully endorse that as well.
We have a great offer right now. It's a $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VEASAN. So here's what you have to do to get this trifecta. Open up a GBank Visa Signature credit card. In the first 90 days, deposit and play through $1,000 at First Bet to trigger the $500 trifecta. Then you're going to get a $200 cashback rewards on your GBank Visa Signature credit card. First Bet is going to give you a $100 deposit match. VEASAN will complete the trifecta with a free VEASAN Pro subscription through August 31st. That is a $200 value. So that's the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bank, and VEASAN. Head over to VEASAN.com/GBank. That's VSIN.com/GBank. This is a one-time promotion. It's limited to customers opening up a new account in response to this very offer. It will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. So apply today. Terms and conditions do apply. When we come back, we're going north of the border. Rachel Dorey is going to join the program, breaking down the Stanley Cup Finals that begin on Wednesday. That is next year. VEASAN by the books.
You're tuned in to VEASAN by the books, right here on VEASAN.
We are back, VEASAN by the books. Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis here on this Monday edition. Tom Petty once famously saying, "The waiting is the hardest part." We got to wait till Wednesday, Jensen. We're almost getting there to game one of the Stanley Cup Final between the Florida Panthers, Edmonton Oilers. This is a rematch from a year ago. Always love catching up with Rachel Dorey here to break it down. CTO of Betalytics. Join us now here on the Progressive Guest Line. Give her a follow on X at the same handle, Rachel Dorey. So we got to wait. Rachel, it's been a wait. Who benefits the most from this waiting before we drop the puck on Wednesday night?
I think it has to be the Florida Panthers. Stuart Skinner was kind of in a rhythm. And when you're a goaltender and you're in a rhythm and you're as streaky as Stuart Skinner can be, a break like this can be problematic and not the best for you. Whereas on the flip side with Florida, Bobrovsky's just kind of been plodding along, and the Panthers have some guys that are playing super dinged up. Sam Reinhart's not at his best. Matthew Tkachuk's not at his best. Etu Luostarinen, not at his best. And so I think anytime you have a break like this, it benefits the team that has guys that are still able to play but are banged up versus the team that is kind of a little bit streaky because of their goaltender. Now, don't get me wrong. McDavid and Dreisaitl have been playing a lot these playoffs, and especially after the fact that Hyman got hurt, they're going to have to play more. And so this rest is going to be fantastic for them. I really do worry about Stuart Skinner and the fact that Florida's got a week here to get healthy.
Yeah, Rach, and I think overall for the series handicap, I know we obviously make a lot of Stuart Skinner games 1 through 3, Stuart Skinner games 4 and beyond. Does that give you, you know, maybe more credence to say, okay, if we follow suit and say, added with Florida's rest time to be able to be ready and fresh, does that give them advantage in game one? Or is this, hey, this is home ice, this is the Stanley Cup final game one, Canada wants so badly to have the cup, and this Edmonton Oilers roster feels it and knows they need to come out and put on a huge display in game one?
I back to talking about Stuart Skinner, like you said, this is kind of one of those things where it's tough. Like, this is a tough thing to handicap. If anything, I'd probably take the over. I would take the over 5.5. I don't like even numbers in terms of, like, 6 or 5. Like, I want the half, so I would just play it down 5.5. I think it's, like, minus 125. It's not that bad. But, yeah, game one, I think if Florida's still at plus money by the time puck drop happens, I would not be taking a bet today. Heading into the cup final, media days tomorrow, you're going to find out the health of certain guys. I would never, ever be taking a bet on the Stanley Cup final game one more than probably 12 hours before puck drop, because you could have a surprise. Like, I could be sitting here saying, okay, X, Y, Z, but then if Sam Reinhart can't play, or if Matthew Tkachuk isn't at his best, or if Etu Lehtinen can't play, like, that's a problem. And so I look at this and I go, just be patient. I get you might not get the best number. If you're that confident in Florida, then sure, you could take them at plus 111. There's not that much value there. So I would take the over, if anything. But for me, like, I'm sitting here and I'm certainly waiting. The thing is, I don't think a lot of these games are going to go to overtime. So I do think there's going to be empty net goals. And so if you're going to be taking puck line, money line, if you think Florida's going to win, yeah, you can get them at plus money. But at that point, just take them on the puck line and do the reverse, right? Take them -1.5. And so there's different ways you can play this, but I would be very patient because Florida does have some injury news coming down the pipe, and it could be some pretty impactful stuff.
Right now, you want to go puck line and the Oilers in game one, instead of laying that $1.24, it's plus $1.95 if you like the Edmonton side there. And again, that total sitting at 6, juice to the over, -$1.15. Rachel, you mentioned the injuries, and certainly on the Florida side, we knew about Zach Hyman, obviously out for the rest of the postseason. Saw the boys FaceTiming him after they got through Dallas. So, you know, want to make him still feel like he's in the fold there. And you mentioned the extra ice time that that's going to have to create for the other guys. Could that be a wear down factor, the Zach Hyman injury, going forward, if this is a deep series, you go to a 6, or like they did last year, to a 7 games?
Absolutely. I had concerns about the Edmonton Oilers wear down and how their best players are being deployed in the first round. We're now in round 4. And I said in the first round, hey, if you are going to do this, you're going to run into trouble later on in the series. And that's exactly, or later on in the postseason. And that's exactly what could happen here, especially with Zach Hyman being out. Now, I do think this week of rest is going to be absolutely fantastic for McDavid and Draisaitl, and all but kind of tamp that narrative down. But I think one of the big things here is Florida is easily the most physical team in the playoffs. They get away with a lot. We've talked about it. But they're just, they finish their hits. They forecheck hard. They'll hack and whack you behind the play. They'll lay the cross check. They'll put an elbow through your forehead, even though that's against the rules. Like, they're willing to do those kinds of things. And so as the series wears on, if they're playing 23, 24 minutes from a wear down perspective, they're going to be taking hits. They're going to be getting abused because the rule book basically doesn't exist in the Stanley Cup final unless a crime occurs. And even then it's like somewhat debatable. So yeah, the wear down factor here is massive, Dave. And I do think that it favors Florida just because of the style that they play. And so I think Florida, if you're going to take Florida to win, instead of taking them like plus 100, take them 4-2 or 4-3. This is not going to be a 5-game series.
Yeah, I think that is a fabulous way to look at it, Rachel. And I was going to parlay off that with, would you be interested in Conn Smythe odds at this point, or just knowing that this series probably doesn't go short, do you just play teams on either side, an Edmonton exacta, Florida exacta in 6 or 7, or is there a certain guy that maybe, not the favorites, but maybe someone on the outside looking in that's worth a stab here in the Stanley Cup final?
Yeah, I think if you don't have a Bobrovsky long shot ticket, and I'm talking like I have him at 28-1. If you don't have a McDavid ticket at 5-1 or better, if you don't have a Dreisaitl ticket at 5-1 to better, don't take them. Like, the value is gone. Now, if you want to take a Conn Smythe guy, the guy I'd look at is Brad Marchand at 75-1.
Ooh.
He has a knack for being a real pain in the rear end at this point in time, and he's been excellent for Florida. He led their team in points through the first two rounds, and that's not for nothing. If he puts up a few points in the Cup final and Florida ends up winning, there's a chance he leads the Panthers in scoring, and because they're so balanced, yeah, he very well might win the Conn Smythe. But I look at this, if you're taking any level of anything, Dreisaitl at 7.5-1 has to be that guy. You can't touch Barkov. He hasn't put up the points. You can't touch Bobrovsky at 2.5-1, and you certainly can't go near McDavid at +110. So to me, if you're playing it, it has to be Dreisaitl or Marchand. But I like the exact bets. Like, I look at this, Edmonton 4-2 or 4-3 and Florida 4-2 or 4-3. If you put $10 on all four of those, it depends on how far you're coming out ahead. But if you really think Florida's going to win, just stick with the Florida bet. If you really think Edmonton's going to win and they're not going to lose 2 years in a row to the same team, then just stick with the Edmonton ones and you're coming out ahead. It's kind of one of those things where it's almost like a chicken out bet. But if you really want to chicken out, instead of taking a team, just take the series to go 6 games and take the series to go 7 games, because that's like +200 and +450 or something like that. That's really good value.
Once this Stanley Cup final rematch was set, it was about -$1.10 each way. Florida is now basically even money to win this. You got to lay $1.20 here on the Oilers side. Maybe that's just because they do have home ice this year. They didn't have it last year. When you look at Chris Knobloch and you're going up against Paul Maurice, do you just say decided advantage for Maurice? Obviously, is the reigning defending Stanley Cup champions going to a third straight final here? Or what does that coaching matchup look like in your eyes?
Yeah, I think when you look at Paul Maurice, he's like top five, I think, in NHL wins all time. Like, talking about a really seasoned veteran. This guy has been coaching in the National Hockey League since before I was born, and I have been on the face of this earth for 3 decades. So it's kind of one of those things where experience is everything. Chris Knobloch is a year and a half into his NHL coaching tenure. Like, that's not exactly a lot. And so you look at Edmonton, and I'm not saying Chris Knobloch isn't a great coach. I think he's a great coach. Paul Maurice is a seasoned veteran, and he's really good at mind games, and he's good at mind games with other coaches. He's good at mind games with other players. We were talking ad nauseum about the handshake line, narrative nonsense, garbage. And so he just understands how to get into the heads of other players and other coaches. And when you're in the Cup final and you guys have been playing and it's a long season, you've been going since training camp in September, you are absolutely tired. And so I look at this and I go, yeah, it is an advantage, Maurice. But the difference between Maurice and Knobloch is Maurice does not have McDavid and Dreisaitl to deploy. And so it really depends on how Chris Knobloch is going to manage the deployment of those two guys.
Are we getting another deep final? Are we getting 6-7 games again?
Yeah, we're probably getting a 7-game final. I would love the season to end in Edmonton. I don't particularly care who wins at that point. I would prefer if Edmonton won just because of like personal connections to the Oilers. But I think at this point, like, Florida's proven who they are, and they're very good. So long series, it's going to be a fantastic one.
It's been over 3 decades since So Canada has hoisted that Stanley Cup. Will it change this year? We will find out. Rachel, we appreciate it as always. Can't wait to catch up again as the series begins on Wednesday. When we come back, we're talking French Open with Dani Clubinger. She is from the Tennis Channel. She is next here, VSiN by the Books.
The Books, right here on VSiN.
We are back. VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross, Jensen Lewis here on this Monday edition. Great having Rachel Dory on, talking all things puck north of the border in the last segment. Now, we get to go to a star in the tennis world. Dani Clubinger, kind enough to join us here in the Progressive Guest Line, does great work over the Tennis Channel. And Dani, so good to be reunited with you. It's been a minute since we've had a chance to chat. And again, we're looking at this thing sometimes I am at least, from an American point of view, right? And yeah. I just look up and I see Jessica Pegula just got knocked out by a French woman, right? So our American woman, she's out there. We still got Coco Gauff. We still have some other chances there. But when overall, for the men and women over there in Paris, why is it just the clay? We just don't play well over there. What's going on?
Yeah, it's just that there's not a lot of clay courts in America. So the Europeans, they grow up on the stuff. They get really used to sliding side to side. Now, you were so sweet by saying that I was a tennis star. Now, let's look reel that back a little bit. I've never played tennis, so I can't give you too many of the nitty-gritty details on what makes a good clay courter. But I can tell you from watching and from just seeing the way that Americans tend to not have as much success on the surface, it's just lack of comfortability, it's lack of courts. They're starting to get a lot better now. Actually, we had the most amount of Americans into the fourth round here ever at the French Open. And I think that's due in large part because Americans and USA and USTA down in Florida have added some of those clay courts. So they're getting a little bit better. We've still got some going deep. Coco Gauff's got a real shot. So yeah, Jess Pegula just losing. That was a French qualifier, guys. She was ranked like way past, like 371 in the world. Ooh. That Jess Pegula is going to hurt from that one.
Yeah, Danny, no question. Great to get your insight. And we know that this has kind of been the Rafa Nadal Invitational on the clay for so many years. But now you get the Yannick Sinners, you get the Alcarazes, perhaps a Musetti in there. For the men's draw right now and where we are at this point, kind of chalk for us thus far, kind of what you expected to play out, or any surprises for you thus far?
This is going to sound nuts, but the surprise to me is Novak Djokovic.
Wow.
Because, you guys, this entire year, he'd lost five first-round matches. That's crazy. We never see him lose right away in a tournament, and it's happened multiple times this year. So we were unsure. Like, where we're talking about Novak Djokovic now versus where we were 2 weeks ago is, like, a completely different conversation, because he won the tournament leading into Roland Garros. It was a small tournament, Geneva. It was his 100th career title. It gave him a boost of confidence. And now he hasn't dropped a set here at the French Open. He's plus, what is it, 800 to win the tournament? Is that what it's still at? That was the last time I checked. This is the guy that's already won this tournament three times.
You can
That's
get crazy. 11-1, Danny, right now. There's still some 11-1s out there on DraftKings, maybe some shorter prices out there to start to get under single digits. But is this just as simple as turning the page, right? Bob Seger. We got the young in Alcaraz and Sinner, and we got arguably, and I know this is an argument, the greatest overall champion of all time in Novak, right? I know Rafa Stan's going to get mad at me, or Roger Federer stands, but I mean, he stood the test of time here. So you still think that's a playable number on Novak and not just sentimental?
Yes, because he hasn't dropped a set. He's looked fantastic and he's playing with confidence. And, you know, he's one of the best athletes we've ever seen, right? So when you're talking about somebody that's hearing all the noise, like, oh, is he done? Oh, are his best days behind him? Like, that competitive juice is just going to, like, motivate him. A motivated Novak Djokovic, granted, he's not the same as what we're used to seeing. That's just scary to me. Now, I do think the chalky picks are there for a reason. Carlos Alcaraz should be the one that walks away with a win at the French Open. He's the reigning Roland Garros champion. He's the best on clay. The thing about Carlos Alcaraz is sometimes he loses a match that he shouldn't lose. Mm. That happens from time to time with him. Yannick Sinner tends to not lose those types of matches. He's usually pretty locked in. That's the difference between the two of them. But Carlos Alcaraz is better on clay than Yannick Sinner. I'm just saying, when you're looking at a champion, a guy that's won this three times, not too long ago. Oh, and hello, one more thing, Dave. Novak Djokovic won gold medal in Paris last year. That was played at this venue. That was last year. And you're getting him at 11-1 odds? Yes, absolutely worth it.
Yeah, Danny, I love it. And I looked at Musetti as well before when the draw came out. I think he was upwards about 20, 22-1, down to 18-1. Anyone else in the double digits you would want to take some pizza money on, or we stay away from it and perhaps flip over the women's side?
I don't think that there's anybody else I'd really look at. Musetti, I do like him. And I actually had him to get to the semis. I don't have him going much further than that, only because I've watched him up close a couple times this year in Madrid and Rome. Now, he's made it to at least the semifinal stage of the last three big tournaments. That's Monte Carlo. He made the final there. Madrid and Rome. So he was playing really well to get deep into tournaments. But I've watched him get a little nervous. And that makes me, that gives me pause for taking him all the way. So I think the only one that really intrigues me that you're getting good value on is Novak Djokovic, third on the board there.
So no shot for our DC guy and Francis Tiafoe here. I know he's 100-1 to win the whole thing, but he's got Musetti next. Because any shot that we get, either he or could we possibly get Tommy Paul in a major upset? That's the last for our American men, for our hopes.
Yeah, it is. Okay, so Tiafoe has Musetti, as he said, and coming into this tournament, he was 13-12 on the season. Guys, that's not a good record at all. He's done well here. In fact, like no one's even remotely challenged him at this tournament. But if you look at who he's played, he's just had a really favorable draw. I just think Tiafoe is going to be outmatched with Lorenzo Musetti on the clay, just based off of current form coming into this. Now, Tiafoe may be able to sneak out a set. If you're looking for an actual play there, I think it's like under 37.5 games is what I would take, because I do think that Musetti can win this one in straight sets. I'm not entirely sure I'll give Tiafoe a shot maybe to win a set, or at least keep some of those sets pretty close. But I think it's Musetti. And then when you talk about Tommy Paul, normally I would say, yes, he does have a shot. Going up against Carlos Alcaraz, though. So that's one knock on him. They just played each other in Rome, and Tommy Paul did win a set. In fact, he won really comfortably in a set. No, that was against Jannik Sinner. Excuse me, I misspoke. But Tommy Paul, typically I would say, on the clay, strong. He's stronger on grass, stronger on hard court, but he also is dealing with a little bit of an abdominal issue, and that makes me a little nervous. Now, he was able to win his last match in 5 sets against Karen Khachanov. So that kind of put to bed some of the worries about Tommy Paul and where he's at right now. But I just think when you're playing against Carlos Alcaraz and you're a teeny bit beat up and you've had to have some really lengthy battles throughout the week, that makes me nervous. Carlos Alcaraz hasn't been tested at all. So, I think it's the end of the road for our two American men there.
All right. As much as we've had the favorites on the men's side, Danny, we're feeling still a collision course. We've got Iga, we've got Sabalenka on the women's side. Anyone else to contend with them for the women's title here at Roland Garros?
Coco Gauff. I mean, my goodness, there's every single reason that you could back Coco. In fact, I have a flyer on her to start the tournament. She was at, I do believe, like plus 450 when the tournament started to win it all. And there's a couple reasons for that. One, she made the final of both Madrid, and those are 1,000-level tournaments leading into the French Open. And they're two different styles of clay courts, which just means that she's playing with confidence. It doesn't necessarily, you know, Madrid is played in the altitude, which plays a little bit more like a hard court, but they were worried about her forehand flying, and she was able to keep it under control. Then she goes to a different clay in Rome and makes the final again. She's lost in both of those finals, but guys, she's won a lot recently, and she's been able to dig herself out of, when she's not well, finding ways to win. And that's the sign of a champion. And she's not on Iga Swiatek's side of the bracket. So you're looking at her potentially playing Aryna Sabalenka, who she has a way better head-to-head against. In fact, she did play Iga Swiatek not too long ago, and she gave up two games to Iga Swiatek on clay. So I think Coco Gauff still has a shot, and she's been playing confident. So if you're looking for someone other than your usual suspects, she's look at.
Very quickly, got about 30 seconds here to go, Danny. Is it going to be Sinner? He's a $2 betting underdog, plus $2 right now to win the whole thing. Carlos, you got to lay $1.10. Is it going to be Carlos against Jannik again in the final?
I think so. But guess what, Dave? We've never seen that before. So what a treat for us tennis fans, right? They've never played at a major final ever, and I think we're going to see it this year.
It's about time to kickstart that rivalry in the final of a major. So maybe we'll get the Italian again as the underdog, even though he's the number one seed in this tournament. Danny, great to catch up with you. I hope you're doing well and you're doing great at the Tennis Channel. We'll do it again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
There she is, Danny Kloppinger. Give her a follow at Danny Klopp on X and check her out over there on the Tennis Channel. Jansen, safe travels to you, my friend. Get back to Cleveland. Get to sleep in your own bed. How excited are you for that?
Oh, my God, I can't wait. Home-cooked food, you don't even know the half of it.
No trains going on behind you anymore when you get back to Cleveland. Don't go anywhere. We've got a numbers game coming up here. Matt Brown standing by with Kelly Bidlin. That is next right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.